Welcome to Nashville Savvy. I'm your host, Megan Lee Petitlik from The Pamphleteer. I feel like I'm not centered. That's okay. I am excited to bring to you some welcome news that finally the General Assembly is finished. That is what Sine Die, our first topic, is about. So at the end of a session, they will adjourn Sine Die. That is the term. It's indefinitely, obviously, they come back each year and they might come back for some special sessions. We don't know, but they are adjourned. I want to go through some of the bills really quickly, the major bills that didn't make it and then the major bills that did make it. So here's your quick preview, if you were wondering. Of course, the ESA bill died. We had talked about that. That was a devastating blow. It really is one of three major initiatives that the governor brought forward this year. So the ESA bill died. So did the the farmland easement bill. If you guys remember talking about that, it was caught up in the Senate. The Senate wouldn't reopen and essentially killed the bill, but then they forced them to reopen, but they still killed the bill. Well, that one also died. The farmland easement bill was also a major part of the governor's agenda. But what was going on last week after the ESA stuff was over was talks of a bill that actually passed, which was a franchise tax bill for Tennessee businesses. So what ended up happening was negotiations with both the House and the Senate leaders and people who were leaders on this bill. They got in a room on Thursday. They talked it over. They made some concessions. One of the concessions being that private businesses who are applying for this rebate will have to disclose the tax, their private tax information. It'll be made public. This was something that the governor did not want to happen, but they did pass it. There are some type of, and I haven't seen the amendment clearly outline this, but there's some type of different types of, what would you call them? Amounts of money that exempt some people from having to disclose certain amounts of money paid in certain areas, you know, dating back to certain times in their tax history and stuff like that. So there are some guardrails on this, but that was a major bill that obviously was up until the last second. They ended up passing it on Friday before they closed session. Leader Lamberth, when he was talking on this bill, he wasn't too keen on the fact that this tax information is going to be made public. A quote from him during the meeting was him saying, for the first time in Tennessee history and for the last time in Tennessee history, this type of tax information would be out there. He also emphasized that the General Assembly is not going to make it into their business of exposing private tax information. He said that this is not something that they're setting as a precedent, and this is like a one-time deal. This isn't going to be a norm for the future. So that was really interesting that those concessions were made about the franchise and excise tax rebates that will be hopefully helping most Tennessee businesses. We did find out from some reporting in the Tennessean that more than half of the money of these rebates are going out of state to businesses who operate in Tennessee but aren't headquartered in Tennessee, which was part of the reason that this became such a hot topic of debate, among many other things. Also causing a stir was a bill that was passed for the concealed carry for faculty in schools. This was all over the news because they're like, teachers are going to be armed in schools and now my kids are going to be afraid of my teachers. And we heard all of the uproar after this was passed. We saw all of the protests after this while this was being passed through the House last, I think it was 2 weeks ago now. But it did end up making it through. I just wanted to lay out some of the stipulations for the citizens who actually would follow through with this. If you're a staff member at a school who wants to conceal carry in school or on school grounds, you have to do 40 hours of a police-approved training each year. You also have to get a TBI background check. You have to get a police psych evaluation. All of this has to be approved by the local LEA. like aka the local school, this local school board, and it is all paid for by that individual. So the state's not paying for all of these things, including their equipment and ammunition and all the training. It is the individual who wants to conceal carry who would pay for that, regardless of the regardless of whether people will actually go through with this. I mean, this is an undertaking if you want to conceal carry in schools. But the idea that staff can potentially conceal carry in schools could potentially be a deterrent for the shooter. We've seen shooters base their targets on information of whether there are armed guards in the school. Though that's true, some places in Tennessee have already come out saying that they will not be implementing this at all. This includes Metro Nashville. This includes Sumner County. So Metro Nashville Public Schools, Sumner County Schools, they've already come out saying we're not going to let anybody do this. Also, the sheriff in Shelby County came out against this law, and the new superintendent at Memphis, at the Memphis Public Schools, she also came out not too keen on the idea. She didn't outright reject or say whether or not they were going to allow it. She just wasn't a fan. So we do have, you know, major area public schools already saying that they're not going to be participating in allowing their staff to conceal carry in schools. But it did pass, and we got a lot of input from people, not just locally, but nationally. Delicia Porterfield, who's a council member here, her daughter actually went up to protest this bill, and she posted on X, "My baby and her friends are literally fighting for their lives. The children are leading." So her daughter was part of the protest against passing this bill and wanting more gun reform. She also was delighted that the vice president, Kamala Harris, also stuck it to the Tennessee legislature. I think it was on Friday, she said on X that arming teachers is not the solution. And we know what actually works. Universal background checks, red flag laws, safe storage, and assault weapons ban. So that was the vice president's two cents on this piece of legislation passed by the Tennessee state legislature. Now, Covenant Moms are calling for the governor to veto this bill. So now that it's on the governor's desk, there are people calling for the governor to just veto the bill. It's up in the air whether or not that'll happen. I haven't seen anything yet, so we will see what transpires. Another bill that passed that I wanted to let you guys know about for Nashville is the East Bank Development Authority bill. So this is going to potentially set up an East Bank Development Authority for this new development happening here across the river from downtown, which goes from the two interstates. It's a big swath of land. There's some privately owned parcels in there. There's some metro owned land in there. There's going to be the new stadium in there. We're going to see the new Oracle campus in there. We're going to get to that in a second. But I wanted to let you guys know that the final bill was a little bit different than what has been making its way through up until this point. In fact, quite a few changes were made in the 11th hour before they closed down the General Assembly last week. This included an amendment by one of the bill sponsors, Senate bill sponsor Heidi Campbell, who is a Democrat from Nashville. She commended the bipartisan work on the bill. She thinks that, you know, the state has a stake in what's going on in the East Bank. We already gave $500 million. We're also investing in TPEC and a couple other things and helping out with stuff. So the state does deserve to have some oversight here. She added an amendment. So originally the bill didn't have any voting board members from the state. That changed. So she added an amendment that would add two ex facto voting board members, and they would be the House and the Senate leader or somebody in their place, somebody that they appoint to be their board, ex facto voting board member on this board. Before I get to the other changes, this could be a sticking point because this bill, though it's passed in the state level, it still has to pass through Metro City Council, and they might not be too keen on the idea that the state has voting members on this board. That being said, other amendments were added that might entice them to go along with this, including an amendment that would actually narrow the powers of the authority. It would be narrowed to they would need the council's approval for certain decisions that they would be able to make. The Metro Council would have to vote first, and then they would the authority might have these powers depending on what way the council or some other departments vote on this stuff. Also, the council would be able to kick off board members. So depending on certain circumstances, they're now given the power to basically be like, you can't be on this board anymore, and then vote on that. So those are two things that were added that might entice the council to vote for it. Also included on the new bill was they made it clear that the authority cannot exercise eminent domain, which is a big sticking point for private parcel owners that have owned land in the East Bank for a long time. We've seen some lawsuits come up because the Metro City Council or Metro government in general has been holding up some of the permits and the permitting process. And people are weary that, you know, because they have this grand vision, they're trying to get in the way of private investors and private developers from actually doing the things that they want to do with their own private land that they already own in this East Bank area. It also would prevent the East Bank Authority from creating their own. This is so strange to me because I didn't even notice this until they made sure to write this out of the language, but it would prevent them from establishing their own law enforcement for the East Bank. So that was interesting. So now they can't create their own law enforcement. And now every year the comptroller will be not just could audit, but shall audit, meaning that they will audit the authority every single year. So those are the changes that are made. Those will what will be coming before the Metro City Council. And that's the stuff that you should look out for and the discussions that'll go forward. I'm sure there will be some pushback, but it's really hard to tell. There's a lot of bipartisan work on this bill. So we'll see how the council reacts to the new passed East Bank Development Authority bill. All right, we're going to get into Oracle. So Oracle is building we've known this for years. They're building their headquarters over here. It's going to be in the East Bank area. It's on the east, you know, the east side over here in East Nashville. But they've announced that they're actually going to turn their Nashville hub into their world headquarters. This is super interesting, just because that's a really big deal, really big deal for Nashville, and really interesting as to what that's going to look like or who that's going to bring to our city. In case you didn't know, they're already going to build a 1.2 million square foot campus over on the East Bank. They're also going to include some type of lake. I have no idea how they're going to pull this off, but apparently there's going to be a lake and it's going to have this stage in the middle of it for performances. They're also supposed to build another pedestrian bridge connecting the East Bank to downtown or parts of, I guess, Germantown over there across the river. It sounds all very Silicon Valley. It sounds, you know, like the work, play, and live all in the same, whatever, 1.2 million square feet type of design that they have at all these tech companies that were in California. They're kind of bringing it to the shores of the East Bank now. So speaking of board members, I just wanted to mention what I'm going to be looking out for, and maybe what you should be looking out for, is if this East Bank Development Authority passes, there will be appointments by the mayor, the majority by the mayor, and then some by the council. And there are no actual stipulations as to who can and can't be on the board. There isn't, though the council can vote people off the board, there's really no restrictions as to conflict of interest written in the final language of the bill or what types of people. They just have to have some type of vested interest or knowledge about what's going on in the East Bank. So it would be interesting to see if people like Oracle executives or, you know, other people who have their stakes in the development of this new Nashville will end up on the board. It's also worth noting that Oracle itself has bought up smaller parcels of land throughout the East Bank. So not just their large campus, but they've been buying up these little tiny parcels of land. So that notion of eminent domain and all that stuff was, people were weary of it. They were weary of who would end up being on the board. So I'm keeping my eye on this Oracle development as we go forward with the East Bank, and so should you. Last but not least, we're going to talk about Tennessee roads, aka Tennessee potholes or death traps. So apparently we're supposedly like have the third best roads in the country. This is a statistic that has been thrown out there that people just roll their eyes, especially lately, given that we're post winter and, you know, they throw some salt on the roads and all the travel that comes through here. And then it creates these, I don't even call them potholes anymore because there are parts of the road that are just an entire pothole. So I'm sure you've driven into those types of things. I just wonder, where do they get the statistics? This reminds me a little bit of the statistic that Imagine Nashville came out with that said that like 96% of people want more buses in Nashville. Like, where are they getting these numbers from? Sometimes these stats are so outrageous that you have to scratch your head because you're like, who are you talking to? You're not talking to Nashvillians. Are you going around and looking at the roads here in Nashville? Of course, at least in Tennessee, but we wrote a little bit about that, the statistics that were thrown out during the transit referendum unveiling today in the pamphleteer. You can check that out at thepamphleteer.co. We haven't fact checked them all. We just wanted to let you know the stuff that they're saying and some of the statistics that they threw out during the unveiling of this transit plan, because they're very interesting. They highlighted about the demographics, how many immigrants are here, how this is a melting pot, how it will be more affordable because it costs people $12,000 a year just to maintain a vehicle, and getting rid of their vehicle will save them $12,000. All of these things were said during that unveiling. So I just was thinking about the Tennessee potholes, the statistic that we have the third best roads in the country. Clearly, that's not how we feel here. And we would love some more tender TLC as far as the roads go in the state and in Nashville in general before we start adding all of this transit stuff. So all that to say, I have talked to some Lyft drivers about this. Every time I take a Lyft, I ask them about how they feel about the potholes because, of course, their living is based off of the wear and tear of the downtown. Not only just the potholes, but people get tons of nails and stuff in their tires because they have the construction going right up to the edge of the road. Sometimes going, you know, they have the scaffolding stuff that takes up lanes of the road. And then when they remove it, the debris and stuff, it gets in people's tires. And apparently it is more difficult now to get the city to pay you. If it used to be, if you hit a pothole, like an egregious pothole, or if you ran over all these nails because of construction, you could approach the Metro government and try to get some type of compensation for that. Now they're just forwarding you to Nashville Hub saying, you know, let us know about the pothole and we'll go and fix it. But they're not necessarily paying these drivers for any of the damages that are done because of all this stuff that is going on with roads here in Nashville. So that was an interesting those are interesting conversations, and I continue to ask every Lyft driver just because it's hard to forget how many potholes, because on your way, even a couple miles traveling, you hit quite a few of them on your travels. So I continue to ask them how things are going as far as getting compensated for any damages on their livelihood of just trying to get people from point A to point B here in Nashville, Tennessee. So with that, there's really not that much else I have to say. I know how you guys feel about potholes. I see some of your comments up on here already, but don't let them get you down. Just don't get swallowed by the potholes out there. And I hope you guys have a good rest of your week. I kind of buzzed right through that. Stay tuned for more about some of the LPR information that's going to come out this after all these community meetings this week. We're going to be looking at some more of the bills that kind of were passed this year that might not be getting as much fanfare as other bills are. There's some really good stuff that's happened, and that happens every year where good things are passed, but nobody really knows about them. Besides that, I hope you guys have a great week. And as always, stay informed.